Looking back on the year 2018, Michigan largely mirrored national gains in the economy with strong employment activity and higher wages. In politics, midterm election voters gave the governorship and Secretary of State's office to Democrats while leaving Republicans with a majority in the legislature. But Michiganders also voted to change partisan gerrymandering, and they made Michigan the first Midwest state to legalize recreational marijuana. In the Upper Peninsula, midterm incumbents held their own, while the GOP added a state Senate seat and flipped one in the House. More UP jobs and development were in evidence, but helping organizations were as busy as ever, and hard drugs took a very serious toll, as did the weather. We'll review those and other news topics from 2018 just ahead on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are WLUC TV6 News Director Steve Asplund, Great Lakes Radio News Director Walt Lindela, and Mining Journal staff writer Jamie Depew. Welcome.
Thank you.
First, some brief impressions of 2018 from our panel. My description would be politically very noisy, but it was, after all, an election year. Your observations, Walt?
I would have to agree with you that obviously politically it was very noisy, but it was a year of political change. We saw a lot of female candidates, obviously.
Especially
nationally, we've heard a lot about it, but locally, even if you look at the race for Marquette City Commission, we had female candidates step forward and win soundly. So it was a very interesting political year that way. And a lot of development news, with developments with the former hospital property and what may be happening with it. The Sioux Locks, a big story of actually looking like something's finally going to happen with that. It's been an interesting year.
Okay, Jamie, what do you think?
I would have to agree with both of what you said as being politically very noisy. As an election year, it generally happens that way. But as far as females going as well, Marquette Commission had two new commissioners come in that are both female, and I'm not sure if it's the first time that the Marquette Commission has had as many females as they have on the commission, but I think that's a great step. And as far as development goes, there's a lot happening in the city of Marquette, and a lot of things were being pushed forward last year, which we're going to see a lot of that development coming up in this upcoming year, such as the hospital complex and Lakeshore Boulevard has a lot of projects, and with Viridia Group also buying some of the parcels of the Heartwood Forest land.
Okay. What do you say, Steve?
Well, I think the headline is ugly because everybody's focus is on the national scene, and politics obviously was in the headlines every day.
Yeah.
Fortunate for us, we live in the Upper Peninsula where we don't have to pay that much attention to that, and we had a lot better change for the positive throughout the area, much like Jamie said, with women joining the Marquette City Commission and the development. I mean, this last year has been a huge year for the trades, the skilled workers and so forth that are really in high demand for putting up a brand new hospital, for putting up even the skilled trade center that they're putting out in Negaunee Township. There's a lot of projects moving forward and a lot of development taking place, which is great for the UP, and that's what we want to see.
Okay. Speaking of women, Democrats made some inroads to improve their influence in state government, and Gretchen Whitmer became governor, Jocelyn Benson, Secretary of State. Democrats added 5 seats to each chamber, but still short of majorities. The GOP has controlled the Senate since 1984. If there's going to be real change at the state level, that might be one place where it happens. The most notable changes in the UP were both on the GOP side, namely the election of former Representative Ed McBroom to the state Senate seat that was held by Tom Casperson, another Republican, and the close victory of Greg Markkinen in the 110th, flipping a seat for the GOP. I mean, that was a few votes.
Yeah, I found the Markkinen race in particular to be a bit surprising. The support had been pulled out of that race by the GOP, basically, in that race. I think it's a couple of things. One is that Name recognition was not a factor in that race, but I will say, as someone who's from the Copper Country, who's a Finn,
yeah,
when you have a Markkanen running, I mean, yeah, it's not really a joke. There is a certain amount of that.
He was a teacher. I'm
he
sure
was a teacher,
well,
yeah. He was well known. But also, there was a good wave of support for GOP candidates, and I think that he was able to ride that and get that. But that race was one of the bigger surprises for me.
That's a tough one. So the 109th district remains the only Democratic stronghold in the UP by a margin of 17%. Any change in political issues going into 2019? Do you see any emerging issues?
I think there's going to be a change no matter what, because we have a different governor, a different political party, so there's going to be change there. It's also a woman, the second female to hold that office,
right,
since Jennifer Granholm.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be change no matter what. Is it going to be for the positive or not? I don't know. I was kind of shocked, I guess you would say, with all this last-minute dealing by the party leaving office, both
right,
in Wisconsin and Michigan, as far as positioning to put their party in the better position as the new year started with a different political governor.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I think, you know, Gretchen Whitmer is a strong candidate, and I think she has the best interests of everybody in mind. And for the UP, with Ed McBroom, I think the UP voted for the person again.
Yeah,
you know,
think so
Ed
too.
McBroom has gone both sides of the fence, and he's been very productive, and I think
real,
that helped.
He's got has a good sense of fiscal responsibility, but he was a guy who took up teaching because he just wanted to see it,
yeah,
see how it worked, and he fell in love with it, and he did other things besides,
yeah,
being a dairy farmer.
Yeah, he still is.
Yeah.
He's also known for being very transparent, too,
right,
which,
oh, yeah,
can be very appreciative.
Yeah. I thought there was I remember when Dianda and McBroom are running, mm-hmm, against each other, or running about the same time, and I didn't see very much difference between the two guys, mm-hmm, actually, both fighters, both, mm-hmm, really interested in the people of the UP.
It'll be a nice transition to see how that develops, going from Tom Casperson, who is much of the same personality and political persuasion,
yeah,
as you go into Ed McBroom's tenure now.
Should be interesting. In Congress, Democrat Debbie Stabenow won a hard-fought battle to retain her seat in the U.S. Senate, and Republican Jack Bergman won another term in the House. And you had mentioned this earlier, Steve, perhaps the top UP story out of Congress in 2018, for the UP anyway, as I mentioned, was the $900 million funding authorization for the Sioux Locks.
Sioux Locks, yeah.
Another major, you know, another super lock for the Sioux. I mean, we had decades of false starts, failed promises, just talk, and it, mm-hmm, appears we could have a lock in, what, 7 years now?
Yep, I knock on wood that this, yeah, is not more talk, because we don't have $900 million on the table yet. We do have all the preparatory funding for studies and so forth out there, which I think is in excess of $30 million, plus whatever the state put in, which is in excess of 50 or something like that. So the money's there to start moving forward. Let's just hope that the production and the follow-through is there in the years to come, because it's not a 1-3-year process to build this lock.
It went very fast, though, with
it
Bergman
did.
In office. And I was trying to think of what changed, and all I could think of was there was, you know, the emphasis by the current administration on infrastructure. Here was one that was easy to do and would have a lot of effect, you know.
I don't know anybody that's against it.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, it's like a lock. You got to have it to get the boats through. The boats are bigger than the current lock, and you have two locks that are disabled because of size. So let's make one that works.
I would be hard-pressed to find opponents either, but then I'm wondering why it took so long.
It's money, and it's not an urgency.
Yeah, not an urgency if you don't live here. Or a shipper.
You know, American Steamship Company.
I do think that it was interesting with that particular story how, if you listen to at least Jack Bergman tell it, it was a couple of minutes with Donald Trump prior to a rally in a car saying, you know, this is this, and it happened.
Uh-huh.
As we've noticed since 2016, the way things normally work in Washington doesn't really apply with this administration.
Sure.
And while I take the story with a grain of salt, I really do, it certainly seems plausible nowadays, doesn't it? That
it
a couple of minutes in a car, you know, prior to a rally, got it going.
Yeah, just may be true. There was more good news and some tough challenges for UP jobs in the regional economy. A new $300 million hospital we mentioned in Marquette should be ready for business sometime in the spring. And some 375 UP Health System nurses there have a new four-year contract after a year-long labor dispute. Now we're told the complex is sold. Who's Viridia Group?
Jamie's covered this the way through.
Well, Viridia Group is a local developer that has had their hands full with a lot of projects over the course of 5 or so years. Okay. I mean, the M-Bank along Washington Street, they did mm-hmm. the Staybridge Suites, they're responsible for that. They just bought, earlier I said parcels, but I believe it's just one parcel that they bought of the Heartwood Forest Land property.
Okay.
And they have a lot of plans. Upcoming plans.
Now they have that whole hospital complex that UP Health System's vacating.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And they're going to have to, you know, they're talking about demolishing a lot of things with keeping the, is it the Nelberg building?
Yeah, and they're looking at keeping the Nelberg building, the parking garage, and then also the connector over the
right.
street, and then the emergency department area. And then the rest of it is probably coming down.
Yeah.
Okay. That'd be interesting. Yeah, for years, Marquette General was buying up homes around there.
They were.
Trying for getting some of that.
And property. Those are in the deal. Some of that property is in the deal. I think one of the things that really made this particular sale, because we know how much speculation was running rampant since the new hospital started being built about what was going to happen to the old hospital.
Sure.
I think what made it palatable to the general public was, at least in the Marquette area, is it was a local developer. It wasn't picked up by somebody, because I still think there's that taste of the what is now the Grandview Apartments, the mm-hmm. former orphanage of an out-of-state owner holding it, letting it fall into almost blighted conditions.
Yeah.
Having a local developer here now, I think that Viridia realizes that although they have all of these other projects in the works, as Jamie mentioned, this is going to be their crown jewel development in Upper Michigan. It's going to be watched around the region with what they do with it, because it's a melding of medical care facilities, business interests, and residentials. And if they can pull this off, which I think they will, mm-hmm. if they can pull this off very effectively, it'll really, really catapult them as a company. You got to remember that almost 7 years ago, you almost didn't know how to say their name. You were like, what is Viridia, or what is this, you know? And now we know them very well.
Yeah,
we
have the potential for this property is limitless, because you have Northern Michigan University right next door, which is a wealth of not only knowledge, but also opportunities.
Sure.
And, you know, the space that you have there, the real estate that's available, that's going to bring a pretty penny for mm-hmm. the folks that are involved with that project.
The former Smurfit Stone paper mill in Ontonagon has yet another lease on life, this time in the form of an advanced $300 million biofuel plant for Sinsel Energy. We're looking at hundreds of jobs beginning with construction this spring. Looks like those jobs are here to stay, or will they?
You know, I hope it works, and I hope it goes great, because Ontonagon doesn't have much to hang his hat on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a hard area,
that
much like the Western
employer.
UP. And they have solid jobs there that would be great, because Smurfit Stone had good paying jobs,
mm-hmm.
and they were a longtime tenant of that area. There's nothing left. It's a slab of vacant property right now. So as a result, this company coming in and making these type of developments and investments should really help the area. I hope they're here to stay, but I hearken back to the UPSCO project, which was the tug and barge project from the 80s, and that didn't go so well. But, you know, these are different times.
Okay. Let's take a moment here to remind our viewers, and especially our radio listeners, that we're talking about the year 2018 in review with WLUC TV6 News Director Steve Asplin, Great Lakes Radio News Director Walt Lindela, and Mining Journal staff writer Jamie Depew. Looks like difficult times ahead, speaking of hospitals, for the Dickinson County healthcare system, which is now restructuring after nearly going bankrupt altogether. It's the area's largest employer. You know, we talked about the one in Ontonagon. This is Dickinson County's, that area's largest employer. What's at the root of the difficulties here? Is it people just not seeking health care from local sources again?
My personal opinion, and I don't have a lot of background to base it on,
okay.
I just think they waited too long to get with somebody.
Right.
You know, you have Aspirus, who came in and bought up a lot of the local hospitals, smaller ones in Iron River, the Keweenaw, Ironwood.
Okay.
You have, you know, Duke LifePoint that came in with UPH UP Health Systems, mm-hmm. Marquette, Portage, and Bell. So you have those facilities that have partnered together, and I think DCHS waited a little bit too long, and their financial picture was going south as a result, and a lot of the investors looked at it and said, like, maybe we should wait. And now they're in a situation where they're heading toward financial restructuring with Bart Stupak at the helm, as far as that goes, okay. our former U.S. representative. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that'll turn things around and give them a solid base and partner with somebody that'll really make a difference, because it is a big institution. It's huge to that community.
The Cohiba County lost some 200 prison jobs in a call that was being challenged in court. I don't know where they've gone with that so far, but the state is closing the Ojibwe Correctional Facility in Marinesco Township. What's behind it, and what's the near-term outlook for the area? I mean, that's a lot of jobs to lose in one sweep.
That is an area of the UP that really cannot afford to lose basically anything, and there's a lot of controversy being talked about in terms of how the decision was made by the DOC and what they were doing. I mean, that was one of the things with the Whitmer cabinet being introduced, that they're maintaining the director of the Department of Corrections carrying over. That was a lot of controversy. This closure was one of the reasons of people being like, they're not really in this for the people. They're not in it. They're certainly not in it for the inmates. The issue that I saw on this was that I felt, at least covering it from somewhat of a distance here in Marquette, but being familiar with that area, I thought the municipalities there and the people and even the staff at Ojibwe made a really decent argument saying, look, you can't shut this down. We're going to dry up without it. There isn't a lot there. And it seemed to fall on deaf ears, and it's really hard to escape that kind of, that kind of reaction from the public.
I thought an argument that they might respond to more is the fact, I thought when you closed a facility like that, you had to score it.
Well, there's allegations that yeah. never happened, and it mm-hmm. goes all the way back years when other facilities were closed. They hadn't done that anyways. And I think it just came down to somebody saying, like, you know, that's too far to transport yeah. inmates. We're going to keep them more centralized this way. Close it down.
And but I don't think they gave them a consideration. That's true. They disregarded the rules.
They did. And, yeah. you know, they sued, and the prison is closed, and now everybody's going like, well, it's too late to do anything now. Because we moved everything, and it's closed.
Yeah.
So,
and I could be wrong, but I remember when they first announced that they needed to make all of these cuts to mm-hmm. the budget, they didn't know which one that they were going to close, and mm-hmm. they just decided on it. And it's kind of unclear of how they came to that determination.
I remember Sarah Cambenzi and Dianda were out there campaigning to get that place preserved
mm-hmm.
For a long time. And I thought they had a good chance. But
I did too.
Yes, it went the other way. We can't overlook the fact that it was the year of Me Too. We had mentioned women in politics, which produced many startling revelations that weren't necessarily political. The top Michigan story in 2018 for the Associated Press, they do a survey annually, and the top story was a prosecution for serial sexual misconduct of MSU sports physician Larry Nassar. And other heads have rolled, since that came up. I think it was interesting to me that they started going after the president, who was considerably enlightened kind of person. It's kind of interesting to find out that they have a case. In the UP, we have the case against 43-year-old Marquette area physician Jonathan Robertson, who's alleged to have bartered drugs for sex. Charges appear to be adding up there, aren't they, Steve?
They are, and mm-hmm. they're going to continue to go in that direction. The case is not over. He's still moving through the process, and it's going to get ugly. I mean, just on face value, what you hear about it, it's not healthy.
Yeah.
I think right now there's currently 22 charges pending against him.
Really? 22?
Yes. It started off with
and
maybe about
wings?
8 or 10.
Yeah,
and
it's more than doubled.
Okay. You know, I think that it bears mentioning that with this whole Me Too movement that has come out, and there were some other cases, of course, but the Nassar case was, in my opinion, really one of the bellwether kind of watershed moments of it.
National news.
has resulted in, again, I go back to change, where I mentioned political change earlier, social change, changes of mores, paradigms, how things have been done, things that we're able to get away with. MSU
the
really,
culture.
In my opinion, MSU, Michigan State University, really stepped in it on how they handled it because they came across, whether this was their intention or not, they came across as being more interested in protecting the brand of Michigan State University than protecting its students and protecting people that are affected by these bad decisions. And you see that now across the board, that attitudes are changing. People are stepping down. They're leaving jobs. There was a change at CBS just this week here where, you know, major leadership is being replaced because they're saying, the way we cover stories and the way we've covered stories is different now. It's a new year, time for change. This has been this is really the big thing that came out of 2018, things are changing.
They also picked a very strong, if I'm thinking of the same person, they picked a very strong woman editor to get in, you know,
yes,
to
at CBS,
take over at CBS.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the old school, the old boys network anymore. It's a different world today.
Well, everyone seems to have a lot of respect for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know that. I would say the leading crime story in Marquette for 2018 was a record 157 meth cases, almost too many to handle.
Yeah.
And if you think of it in terms of the docket and what you have to cover in a year or so, you know. And nearly 650 felonies, almost 100 more than the previous year. The county prosecutor says the type and availability of meth indicates it's no longer a local problem, that is meth production. What's the theory?
It's easy to make. It's a cheap high. It's everywhere.
Apparently, the one that's proliferating now is not so easy to make as a pop bottle method. Before, it's crystal, and they say it comes from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of drugs coming up through the pipeline from Chicago into Menominee and so forth, and they look at it as a rural area. Missouri is a prime example. It's a huge area for meth, because it's rural and it just proliferates into the smaller areas. Much what the UP is seeing, because you just go out in the woods or whatever for regular meth. The crystal meth, it's a straight pipeline. It's not like you're gonna get stopped coming over the border here from Wisconsin with regards to drugs and so forth, unless you look shady to begin with, and then you have suspicions.
As to felonies generally, a lot of capital crime was on the books. In April, 38-year-old Kelly Cochran of Iron River, correct me if I get this wrong, she was sentenced for the murder of her husband, having been convicted and sentenced in 2017 of conspiring with him to murder her lover several years before.
Mm-hmm.
And police say she may have killed up to 9 people.
That's the allegations. They haven't,
they haven't proven any of that,
but... You know, it's easy for somebody that's never going to leave prison to start
laying
claim to
life
that.
Sentence already.
So she's not getting out anytime soon. But it is a really twisted, torrid tale. And it was, I think it was at the Discovery Channel that had the actual investigation.
It was a true crime.
True crime type of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was made for TV, much like Richardson.
I remember that.
Pictured Rocks for Dateline.
Yeah, not exactly what, Travel Michigan was looking for the pure Michigan campaign, you know.
No.
Other capital crime cases passed or pending from 2018 that stand out? Any in particular? I noted that firearms were involved in several, but not most of them.
No, I got to believe that we didn't have as many murders or top big cases like that in the last year.
Okay.
In your statement about meth and the drug problem, I think it overshadowed a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
There have been the association type of cases that have been out there with homicides and so forth, but drugs just overshadowed everything.
A couple of cases of manslaughter, drive-by shooting, a couple of cases in which child abuse led to death.
Yep.
Or alleged child abuse.
Down in Delta County. And the thing is that you can almost tie everything back to drugs in some form. You know, this was caused by a drug-infused rage. Caused because the drug deal went bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of cases like that, you know, are started with the drug issue.
Sure. Probably the way alcohol has been implicated in so many violent crimes. At year's end, a mystery still revolved around a fatal fire in February that destroyed 2 buildings in Ironwood. The fire claimed 3 lives. They rescued 3 people. Some top investigators have been called in, so it sounds like more than just a fire. Have they determined the cause?
They have not. It's still under investigation. It's one of those, I think, that were so much damage and so much burned in the fire that it's really tough to narrow it down to an actual cause, so it'll probably go down as undetermined, because what started is probably known by the three people who passed away in the fire.
I see. It was supposed to have started in one apartment.
Correct.
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay. Weather was news across the country in 2018. This is quite a saga, partly underscoring sensitivity, by the way, to the issue of climate change, which really took off in 2018, I think. The big one in our region was probably the Father's Day flood in the western UP, especially Houghton County, that claimed the life of a 12-year-old boy. It did estimated $30 million damage and destroyed hundreds of roads, really. We've seen heavy rains before. What made that one so destructive?
Well, I'm born and raised up there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I in my 50-some years, I have not seen it get like that at all. It was a combination of the right amount of rain, the ground was right for it, and then it just was also a storm front that stayed in place. It didn't just rain and move through. Mm-hmm. And then if you're familiar with the topography there, basically a valley. Houghton and Hancock and Ripley and those affected communities are on a valley. But even where in Chassel, where I'm from, there was still flooding there.
Yeah.
And that's a fairly flat area. Being close to the body of water, Portage Lake, the Portage Canal, it was the perfect storm, but it was like no one was ready for it. Yeah. No one was ready for what happened.
The mid-April snows rocked the region, setting a record in Menominee, almost 25 inches, the worst since 1919. Then the pattern was disrupted again by heavy September rains. Then several months of cold and snowy weather. In Negaunee Township, snow was a foot above average in November. The township kicked off December with a record 14.2 inches and record daily precip, you know, from there on. Any theories put forth, or was this just more of what we should be used to living up here?
Cyclical, I guess. You know, I mean, it's a fact of life. We're going to get it. You know, some days have been rather warm in the last month or so, which is unusual, but then again, you know, that's not uncommon. I mean, we've had winter disappear the end of February.
Years ago on St. Patrick's Day, I believe it was 80 degrees.
80 degrees,
so.
And we've had 20-some inches on May 5th or 10th, I think it was.
Okay.
So it's not uncommon.
Not uncommon. So.
And not totally to, you know, bypass climate change, but we've been known for spontaneous weather in the Upper Peninsula. I'm born and raised here, and ever since I was a kid, I just remember it always fluctuating. So.
Okay. I'm afraid we have to call it there for time. We've been talking about the key events in the year 2018 with WLUC TV 6 News Director Steve Asplund, Great Lakes Radio News Director Walt Lindela, and Mining Journal staff writer Jamie Depew. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Bill Hart. See you next time on MediaMeet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.